Hello and welcome to another episode of Chicago Business Podcast. I am your host, Drew Sekula, and today we welcome Laura Rico, president of her own public relations firm. She has an intriguing background in television and film and has overcome significant adversity to achieve impressive success in building her own business. I'm sure you will be empathetic to her story and learn more about how to challenge yourself when times are tough. I know I found her story enlightening and inspiring as well. So with that, thank you for watching and enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to episode 10 of Chicago Business Podcast. Today we welcome Laura Rico, the president of Laura Rico Public Relations LLC, also known as LOPR. Prior to starting her company, Laura worked in Hollywood as a television and film actress while doing PR for herself and her friends. She has overcome a tremendous amount of adversity, including losing her husband to a brain tumor, which has turned into an inspiration. LOPR is based in Chicago and represents high-profile clients across the country and in a variety of industries. Welcome, Laura, to Chicago Business Podcast.
Hi, Drew. Thank you. Thank you for the warm welcome.
Yeah, it's great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you. So let's start with the icebreaker, the beverage of the day.
Yes.
Sometimes I don't get to this till later, but, you know, on this Monday morning, why don't you go ahead and explain your selection?
My selection is orange juice because it's morning and it's Monday and I'm not a big drinker to begin with. I'll have a glass of wine here and there, but not on a morning and not during work. So OJ it is. Cheers.
There you go. Cheers. Cheers for that. All right. So let's start perhaps with your origin story. If you can talk briefly about your connection to Chicago. I know you're a long time probably a lifetime resident with a stint out on the West Coast, similar to me. Let's start there.
Okay, great. So yeah, I have spent most of my life as a model and a commercial and television and film actress and some theater as well. So in 2002, my boyfriend at the time and I moved to California to pursue or continue pursuing our careers in the entertainment industry. He worked behind the scenes. And I, working on camera, this was our motivation for going out there for so many years, something that we both really wanted to do. So when we met, we had a plan that we were going to do it and we were going to go out there, and we did. And we stayed for 12 years and we loved it. I did a lot of TV shows. He worked as a graphic designer. He was one of the best in the industry in television. And in 2007, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor. So that kind of changed the direction in which we were going. I kind of took a little bit of a step back. I continued to work, but my primary goal was taking care of him and working hard to get him back to health. So throughout all of these difficult road bumps, we continued to work. He had upwards of 9 recurrences of his brain tumor. And in 2012, it got really difficult. So we decided to move back to Chicago, where we're from, to be near family. And he continued to work. He took on a job on a TV show called Betrayal for ABC. It was a short-lived network nighttime drama. And he loved it. He didn't want to stop working. But unfortunately, he had that, what would be that 9th recurrence of his tumor. And he had to take a step back from work. And I completely stopped working in my industry to take care of him. So I took a year, and ultimately he would pass away about 9 months after this awful reoccurrence. And after both of us having taken some time off, I wanted to be home with him and take care of him and spend that time with him, which I think is important. And family is first in my life and in my opinion. So I did that, and I don't regret it. It was the best thing that I ever did, was take the time to take care of him, because like I said, family comes first. So I took another year to kind of figure out what my next steps were going to be. And I still went back to LA. I did a commercial out there. I did a film in New Orleans. I did some modeling, and I realized, you know, I don't think I want to keep doing this full time. It's not as stable as it used to be. The business changed dramatically. Even though it's more accessible and you can do self-tape auditions and kind of work from home and fly where you need to be. So I moved that on the back burner and now it's a hobby. And a friend of mine, a celebrity friend of mine, had reached out asking if I would do PR for him. And I had already had the experience of doing public relations for myself, my husband, and friends in the industry. So once I did it for this friend, people saw what I was doing and the great things we were making happen for him. Other people started to inquire about my services. So I officiated the business on my husband's birthday on April 4th, 2016. So as a way to keep his memory alive and motivate myself to keep moving forward and find something positive in something so awful. So in his name, I did it on his birthday and I named the company Laura Orrico Public Relations. And we are just over 4 years old now.
Yeah, well, that's obviously incredible stuff that you've been through, and I guess the working world is probably much easier than a lot of the family issues that you had to work through there. But having experienced some loss, and with my father some 7 years ago, I know at some point you also need to kind of put it aside a little bit and decide what you're going to do next, because you can't be defined by your past.
Exactly. And that's the difficult thing. And he was very adamant about me moving forward. And I like the term moving forward, because I'm not forgetting about him and moving past, but I'm moving forward and able to keep myself moving and remember him and remembering the good things. Because it wouldn't do me any good to sit home and do nothing and be sad forever, even though it is sad. And I will obviously carry that with me for a long time. But it gives me motivation to do it in his honor. So that has helped me tremendously.
Do you have any children or no?
I don't. No, just me. Yeah, no children, unfortunately.
Right. Yeah, I know that sometimes that can, well, it complicates things, and certainly they give a lot back, and that's something that is important to me in my family life. But but luckily, I've haven't had to experience the same, it's very different, I know, between a parent and a spouse, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's difficult. And I have both ends of it, because I lost my dad suddenly to a heart attack when I was 9. And now my mother suffers from MS, and she just got diagnosed with Parkinson's on top of that during this pandemic. So I'm caregiver again and been helping her. So it's difficult, to go through seeing your loved ones sick.
Right.
It's a hard thing. It's not easy.
It certainly is. And, it's great that you've been able to do so much in your professional career and persevere as you have through it all. So I'm excited to talk about that. And, we're getting a little bit on into my agenda here, and that's certainly okay, because one of the topics I did want to talk with you was about overcoming adversity. But I think that we'll hear a lot about that as we talk about kind of the rest of your story, which is quite impressive, because I know that you're, in addition to your caregiver responsibilities and what you had gone through with your father as well, I know you've done, you're doing great things in your professional life as well. So
thank you.
Maybe we can move on with and talk a little bit about growing up and kind of a story from childhood that perhaps put you on your path.
Yeah, definitely. So as a kid, my mom, obviously it was just her and I from age 9 up, because I lost my father really young. So she taught me responsibility and independence and how to get stuff done and not procrastinate. So at a very young age in high school, I learned to pay bills on time, to be responsible, to save money, but life is short. So to also be able to enjoy yourself and get out there, because so many people will save and save and save and not do a thing until they retire. But how do you know you're going to make it to retirement? So I'm not saying don't save for retirement. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying live your life to the fullest while you're young and now and every day. And with my mother's teachings on responsibility and, you know, to not procrastinate and to get things done, but to make time for people in your life, from friends to family. And from all of that, I've been able to be really comfortable with networking and meeting people. And that's important in my business, in any business, is being able to communicate. And it's funny because I was really shy growing up. So as a kid, I always knew I wanted to be an actress, but I was debilitatingly shy in school. So I would perform for family and close friends, and I would take little classes outside of school and stuff. And I got better as I got older when I got into college. So for me, one of the difficulties was being able to find a way to come out of my shyness and not be afraid to perform in front of people. So I went to Second City after I graduated college and learned how to improvise and not care about what you look like or what you say when you're on stage, you know, to be funny and to articulate my acting skills and my communication skills. So that helped me a lot too, and opened me up to my business and college too. Obviously, I went to Columbia College Chicago, where I majored in TV writing and producing and minored in acting. And then, like I said, would go on to Second City after. So I kind of started coming out of my shell in college, but Second City really catapulted me to improve my confidence and communication skills and my comedic skills. And then I went into acting after that and started doing a lot of television and modeling and short films, and then kept moving up from there and doing bigger films and network TV shows and things like that. But I always had a business background, because when you're an actress, a lot of people don't realize 75% of the work is working to get work. So I was always running my own business, doing the advertising, the accounting, setting up interviews. It's a lot of work, and a lot of people don't realize that. You don't just get lucky and sit there waiting for a break. It doesn't work that way.
So did you have an agent as you were working through that, or were you doing it on your own, or what was your balance there?
I bought a book as a kid at the library or at the bookstore, and it was a basic book on how to get into modeling. And then there was a section in there that taught you how to take care of your business and track your tax deductions and anything that's deductible related to the business. And I was only in my mid-teens at that time. So that really taught me a significant amount about responsibility, in addition to what my mom taught me. So I'd say within 2 or 3 years, I was doing, you know, that was my part-time job throughout college, was modeling. I was doing print ads for JCPenney's and Sears, and I got headshots done. So to answer your question about the agent, I sent out my resume that I made by following the rules in that book and straying the rules a little bit, because sometimes that's what gets the attention. If you're too much by the books, that doesn't help you, believe it or not. You got to do something to stand out. You got to do something different. So I got an agent, and that's who would send me on auditions. And then I did well, you booked the job. And that's not always the case either. You can go out there and be fantastic. And you have to remember that there's thousands of other people auditioning for the same gig. So just because you're good doesn't always mean you're going to get it. So it's a lot of rejection. It's a lot of business. And it's a little bit about talent, a little bit about look, a little bit about right place, right time. A lot goes into it. But yeah, I had an agent. Then when I moved to LA, I always had an agent, but most of the work that I booked was on my own through my connections or people that saw my work that wanted to work with me. So kind of crazy. You have to have an agent, but most of the stuff I booked was on my own.
So that was all after Second City. So at Second City, were you doing stand-up comedy, or what were you doing there?
No, Second City is improv and sketch comedy.
I'm not as familiar with it as I thought I was thinking.
Yeah, so that's how a lot of the people from SNL.
That's what I thought.
They came out of Second City. So improvisation is a big component to sketch comedy like SNL. So to have those skills and fine tune those skills. And then they also have writing classes where you could write sketch. I didn't take those classes, but I know how to write comedy as well, kind of self-taught. And did some TV writing classes in college. Like I said, I majored in TV writing and producing, but the comedy writing was my thing. So flash forward all the way to 2012, I made homemade sketch comedy and improv character videos, and SNL considered me for my writing and as a cast member for Saturday Night Live. Obviously, I didn't get it, but it was cool just to be considered.
That's awesome. There are some great people who came through Chicago and Second City.
Yeah,
did make it onto SNL, right? Who are some of those people?
Definitely. I think Chris Farley, I think, came out of Chicago. So many of them came out of there. I can't place who came out of Chicago. Some came out of the
Didn't Toronto John Belushi one. Even start there, I think?
John Belushi, Jim Belushi. I know Martin Short. I know, Tina Fey came out of Chicago, Second right. City. Rachel Dratch. Jim Zulovec, he since passed away, he wasn't on SNL, but he did a lot of sitcoms and TV work, and he was a very well-respected comedic actor.
Nice. So reading about your background, it sounded like you were, even as a kid, you were doing some of that sketch comedy for family, though, right?
Yeah, I wasn't super shy in front of close family, so cousins would come over, and they weren't the entertaining type, but I would force them into... to doing a show with me. So every time they come over, oh, Laura wants to do a show, and I'd pull costumes out of my toy box or whatever, and I'd line everybody up and we'd do a show, and I just loved it, and they hated it but the family enjoyed it. But now their kids, my cousin's kids, love doing shows and performing, and they're into theater and dancing and all that stuff. So funny.
That's great. Mm-hmm. So you also did some runway modeling along the way as well. Is that right?
I did. Yeah. I did Betsy Johnson, Nordstrom, French Connection. But here's the kicker. I wasn't quite tall enough to do the big time modeling like I always wanted to do. I always dreamed of, doing these high fashion shows in New York. But only being 5'5", 5'6", in order to do petite work, you have to be 5'4" and under. In New York, I think petite is 5'7", but here in Chicago, 5'4". And I was just almost 5'6", so I wasn't tall enough to do the big stuff, and I wasn't short enough to do the petite, so I had to lie about my height and pretend to be shorter. So what I did was petite runway shows. And I worked, and I taught runway too for many years to the taller girls, because there wasn't quite enough work for a petite runway model, but I did print work and commercial print, and then I taught the tall girls how to walk.
Nice.
Yeah.
And then you went then you headed out to LA.
Right. That was back in 2002. We had a Screen Actors Guild commercial union strike, and everything kind of died in Chicago because Chicago is a huge commercial market. And like I said, we always knew we wanted to go out there. So we made the move. We drove out there. But after a month of planning, went out there, found a place, came back, drove. Put a car on a flatbed, drove a moving truck in one of our cars, and we moved. And then within a month, we were both working.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't working the big time yet, but he got a job on a movie called Polar Express, which is a huge,
right,
very famous Christmas film with Tom Hanks, and it was the first full motion capture film of its kind. And he was an assistant to the art director, Rick Carter. And Rick, if you look up Rick's done a ton. And I started doing whatever I could do. I did print work. I was doing extra work because I was union. So in LA, that's what you can do. You can't put that on your resume or anything. It's just a way to get on set, get out there, make money, and meet people. But on the side, I was auditioning to get actual acting work. So I started to book roles. I started to do student films and some short films, whatever I could do to get something for a reel. Because I did a few under fives and guest stars in Chicago. But even moving to LA, I thought, oh, I've got all these credits. I'm in the union. And it doesn't matter. It was like starting all over again. So the first year or two, that's what I did. And then eventually got a recurring role on Frank TV on TBS with Frank Caliendo. It was a sketch comedy show. And I did a half a season on that and go on to do a variety of things like guest star on CSN Miami, King of Queens, Malcolm in the Middle, a Lifetime movie, you know, a whole variety of things.
Nice. And then some film work as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I did a movie called Wedding Crashers. And I had a little part in it as Rachel McAdams' cousin. So I'm a bridesmaid in Vince Vaughn's wedding, and line got cut, but I'm still in the movie. So you still see me. But yeah, I did a lot of bigger roles in independent films and smaller parts in some big films.
Right. So cool. Yeah, that's quite the story and quite the backdrop to what you're doing now. So we talked about your reason for coming back to Chicago and kind of how you got into the public relations, but maybe you can talk some about what you're up to these days.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. So running full speed ahead with this PR firm, we are based in Chicago, but we represent a variety of clients across the country. So from Michael Reagan and helping him with his veterans initiative, the Ronald Reagan Legacy Foundation and the Walkway to Victory. We had the Ides of March, who just released their 55th anniversary album, and they had the platinum record Vehicle. Jim Peterik and the Ides of March. Jim Peterik also co-wrote Eye of the Tiger and was one of the founding members of Survivor. So we have a variety of clients, from musicians to public figures, political figures, business, restaurants. Yeah. It's great, and I love it. So.
Nice. That's awesome. So who would you consider kind of your top influencers to help put you on your path along the way, or people you looked up to along the way?
In my business?
Well, throughout your your business and, how you are today, who you are today.
I have to say, it's not who you would expect. It's not anybody famous, but my mom and my great aunt. So my great aunt was, she just passed away 5 years ago, right before my husband. But she was an amazing impact and influence on me. Very strong, very independent, very smart, and financially smart as well. And my mother too. So very smart. And taught me so much, and I would not be who I am without them.
Right. So. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then obviously you've had some men in your life too that we've talked about, between your father and your husband. That
definitely my husband's a huge influence, and I don't think I'd be doing this or I'd have this business if it wasn't for him. He always reminded me to get out and meet people, go for a coffee meeting, pick up the phone. He always said, pick up the phone, call somebody, and for networking for him was not just an email or a text. It was physically making plans, calling somebody and meeting with them in person. So I still live by that. And I know it's fading away. And I'd rather do it a phone call than a Zoom meeting. I know during the pandemic, everybody's on a Zoom and I'm not a fan. I like this. This is fine. This is different. But I rather pick up the phone and call someone and see someone in person. And I know that's hard to do, obviously, during this, but I'd rather just call. I'm not a big Zoom meeting person.
No, I'm right there with you. Yeah. This whole podcast, when I started it, a few months back, was never meant to be in this format. In the first, the first several episodes were not, but we've had to, along with everybody, kind of adapt along the way, and hopefully looking forward to getting back to, I don't know, I guess there's a hybrid approach that is ultimately where we're going to end up, where it's going to be some combination of the two. But like you, you know, I prefer the face-to-face meetings, and there's something lost when it's, you know, when it's all, when you don't have that, that connection.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. The other day I had new clients come over cause I work from home. So I work from home already. So we're always out meeting clients when we did a coffee shop or a restaurant, and I had brand new clients wanted to come over. They were so excited to get started. They dropped over their contract and everything. And I got to meet all three of them in my driveway. We did a little driveway gathering outside and that was great. Cause I missed that. So we've been doing that lately too. Family and friends come over. We sit in the driveway and enjoy some in-person time now that the weather is better, which was not easy during the first part of this in Chicago, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and all that rain in yeah. May as well didn't help a whole lot either. No. But yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, you know, Illinois is supposedly, you know, out in front a little bit in terms of working through this. But in terms of opening up, it's still... still slow going, so.
I know.
What, how else has, have you had to adapt with the, given the pandemic? What's been the impact on your business besides more Zoom meetings?
Yeah, it hasn't had too much of an impact other than just the way we work is a little different. So Taylor and I normally work together in my home office. So we've been working remotely in our respective homes. And a lot of people during this time looking for a positive story. I think people are just done with so much negative news and people want to hear a positive story. And all of our clients have positive stories to share. And I think, you know, there's a certain portion of the media that wants to share a positive story. So that's actually been helpful. So we haven't yet, knock on wood, praying we don't, we haven't taken a hit. So I'm grateful for all of our clients for sticking through it. And I've seen a change. There were some clients that, you know, unfortunately weren't able to continue past their contract due to everything, but they hope to come back when things get better. But for the most part, we've sustained. So yeah, well, that's been good.
That is good. That's, you know, better than many. And
yeah.
And I think you, it's been interesting in terms, so much has kind of depended on the industry that you happen to be in terms of, you know, some people have been wiped out during the period in terms of at least not been able to keep doing what they've been doing. And others have been, you know, as busy or busier, just depending on where you happen to find yourself. It's almost like where you were born in the world, right? It's you just happen to be there and you got to make the most of the situation that you're in.
Right, right. It's good to see things opening back up. It's just taking a while. Yeah, it's a shame because I think we need to get things moving. I think there's people suffering in many ways, you know, in addition to the virus. I think people are suffering without being able to earn money through their business and it's hard, and that's people's livelihood too. And it's a lot of people are depressed, and a lot of other things happening from not being able to get about their business, which is difficult. So I'm glad to see things opening up.
Yeah, I think that everybody's ready for us to turn a corner and hopefully get on with things. It's just, I guess I understand you don't want to do it too quickly and
right, just safely.
But at least we successfully flattened the curve, if nothing else, right?
Right. And that's what's important. And people get the hang of being safe until this goes away. And I hope it does go away, you know. And I know they're working hard on different ways to eradicate it. So just got to hope it works. Yeah. Stay positive.
Exactly.
Stay connected. Exactly.
So we talked about some of the short-term things that have we've had to do with regards to the pandemic and how that has changed your business. But what other kind of innovation have you seen in both in your business there and PR? And then I'm also interested in and hearing, you know, about in Hollywood as well.
Yeah. As far as it relates to current times, you mean?
Yeah. And just how things have changed, and then what does it look like? You know, what kind of trends do you see happening going forward?
Yeah, I see the changes I've seen. Well, this industry has turned so everything's done electronically, and thank God for technology. So like I said, with the Zoom meetings, my business, I've always been able to work from home and remote. And I'll have clients in California that I've only met on the phone or in New York or all over the country. So the Zoom meetings are great for that. You know, that's enabled us to, we've always been able to do that though, but I guess we're just doing it more. And things are moving faster. I think people are learning to work faster and more efficiently during this time, and learning, like we already did, to juggle your home life and your personal life while working from home. That's something we do, but I think a lot of people are learning that. And then as far as the entertainment industry, yeah, there's been some changes, a lot of regulation and hold back from being able to work again, and what needs to be done if people do go back to work, and some shows and live shows and things, some of which in California have been canceled all the way through July of 2021, I heard. So some of it's been excessive, if you ask me, but I'm not living there anymore. I'm just getting the word from friends who are really disappointed, that really want to get back to performing and go back to work. And, you know, we got a letter from our union that stated, you know, the steps that need to be taken for things to get moving again and what it'll be like on set. So hopefully that helps as far as that stuff goes.
How has that been changing in terms of like the influence of the unions? Are they still, my perception is that they have had an incredible amount of power, you know, in the past. Is that, has that changed at all? And what's your perspective on the unions as well as the agents?
Yeah, there've been some contract changes over the last several years because of different jurisdictions. So from having Hulu and Netflix and, you know, shows on the internet, there's everything, in my opinion, is kind of spread thin. So it's so different now. There's still union work, a lot of jobs still going out of the country. Different states with better tax incentives are more appeasing to producers. So I don't know, I can't say much because I don't work in it full time anymore like I used to, but kind of watching from the outside and learning a little bit, it's changing. You know, I know we had a recent contract change, which seems something, you know, that was going to be positive for everybody, which is good because it's not what it used to be, you know, where you do a job and then it reruns on TV and then you get residuals. That still happens, but now, like I said, it's spread so thin with different media, different mediums, different ways to showcase and different ways to air things.
So, right. Yeah. Just the whole distributed network and then thinner margins, but, hopefully, you know, I don't know about the volumes, right? I mean, for the in-demand stuff, it seems like there's still a lot of content that is not available out there, though, right? I mean, sure, you can find a lot of selections, and there's more to choose from than ever. But I don't know. I've always had this vision of, I think it might have been that Quest Communication. It was before this, but I was inspired by the Quest Communications commercial back in, like, I think it was still the 90s, where, you know, you could watch anything at any time, and we're still not there yet, right? And it seems like there's a great amount of content that still, you know, it has not been tapped yet.
Yeah, are you talking like some of the older movies and stuff?
Yeah.
Up on Netflix?
Yeah, and shows. And,
yeah, absolutely. And the video stores, mostly gone, and I like going into a video store. I miss that. We have a video store out here that you can physically go into called Family Video. A lot of those are closing, but there's still some left, and I support that.
Yeah, although, you know, that's obviously it's tough business with everything moved to digital. I'm just slightly familiar with that, with Family Video, and I know that I think the way they've been able to stick around as long as they have is because They own all that real estate, right? They're on, they have great locations and they're attached to the, you know, they have like strip malls there that they are, and they generally own all of that property and lease out the property. So that's how they've been able to, that's one of the reasons they've been able to stick around as long as they have.
Yeah, and they sell a lot of snacks and video games. A lot of kids will go in there and rent a video game. Video games are expensive, so if the parents don't want to buy it, they can go rent it. So
hopefully there'll still be a place for that down the road, but they're not going to have it. They're not going to have everything that you want. And I think that really the physical medium is probably going away, but it seems like there's got to be just a tremendous amount of content that's stored away in the vaults in Hollywood that you know, they just got to figure out the best way to unleash it.
Right. So many old TV shows. And one example of a show I like is Who's the Boss? I don't even think that's available. I haven't been able to find that anywhere. But
right. No, that's a great example. Yeah. A great example.
Yeah.
And then, what about, so we talked some about the unions, and then what about agents? What do you see in terms of the roles of agents, you know, today and going forward versus before? It seems like, I mean, you have, you know, you're certainly a few years removed from being out west, but it sounded like they had a limited amount or of value that they added in terms of being able to get you booked where you wanted to be.
Yeah. It wasn't even them. They're great. I still have an LA agent, Chicago agent, and a Louisiana, New Orleans agent. And they're all great. It's really nothing to do with that. It's just, like I said, so many people are auditioning for the same role. And that's just how it is. It's just the competition. So I worked hard on my end, too, to get myself out there and promote myself and get some recognition. So I was able to make a little bit of a name for myself by doing that and book myself. So in addition to them working for me, they booked me stuff, too. But taking care of that business end, going back to that I talked about and booking myself and getting myself out there. They're great. Agents are great. They help you negotiate. They have access to the casting directors and they can submit you for roles. That's a big part of it. So especially now, I don't have time for that anymore. So I rely on them to handle all that. Once in a while, I'll still get a call from a producer, somebody. I did an episode of Kevin Can Wait 2 years ago. So I went out to New York and did a guest star on a sitcom with Kevin James and Leah Remini. And that was great. So that was an example of something I got on my own. But it's agents are necessary. They're helpful. You know, they have the know-how, the negotiating skills, the connection. They know who on their roster is fitting and, you know, best for each role. And they're always going to have access to things that we don't as talent. So.
Right. Yeah. That's interesting to hear. That's great. Mm-hmm. So, what's next for you and for your business?
So getting through the summer here with some new clients and some amazing things, hoping to get back working together soon with my lead associate. So we've been working remotely because of everything, but hoping to slowly start to come back together and work in the home office, even if it's just a few days a week to start and then start jumping back in normal. It's nice to work in person because we sit side by side and we work hand in hand on every client's account. So I think that's the goal for this summer and to keep making amazing things happening for our clients.
That's great. That's great. So... all right. Well, where, you know, if people are interested in learning more, where can they find you and, what's the best way to get in touch?
Yeah, absolutely. So my website is lauraoricopr.com and my last name is spelled O-R-R-I-C-O. So lauraoricopr.com. And then for the actress stuff, it's lauraoricopr.com. And you can email me through either website. You could find us on social media. Look up Laura Rico Public Relations on Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. And same for Laura Orico, the actress, on everything all social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn.
Yeah, we'll be able to find you. Obviously, we'll link you up entirely on all the outlets that we send out. And I'm sure that you'll be pushing it out from your end as well. So
absolutely.
With that, I'd like to thank you for your time. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. And have a great day, okay?
Thanks a lot, Drew. You too. Thanks again.
Take care, Lori.
Bye-bye.